From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
In this episode of Fragmented, we talk about CI, CD, and CD services. That's continuous integration, continuous delivery, and continuous deployment. BuddyBuild, a beloved third-party service of mine, and a previous sponsor of the show, is sunsetting their Android services. So Don and I discuss alternatives and the options we've been keeping an eye on. Listen on to find out the juicy details.
How many times have you wanted to create an application with a map, but you wanted that map to have a custom look to it? And then you kind of went down the route of trying to customize that map and realizing that you'd have to hop through a whole bunch of hoops to get things done. Well, probably more than one if you're like me. Thankfully, there's a company out there to help you, and that's Mapbox. Mapbox is a location data platform that enables developers to build experiences for understanding and exploring our world. In short, Mapbox has an Android SDK that you can plug into your application with just a few lines of code. It'll give you display accurate turn-by-turn driving, walking, or biking navigation, and real-time traffic right there in your Android app. This is huge. The other cool thing that I really like about it is that they offer you complete map design control. So if your application is dark-themed, you can theme it to your dark theme. If it's a light themed application, you have a light themed map and so forth. So this is tremendously important and thankfully so much easier to do. They offer a whole bunch of other things such as location search, which is also known as geocoding and reverse geocoding, retrieving your device location, geospatial analysis, and the list goes on and on and on. So if this sounds like something that you're interesting to you, you need a map, definitely check out Mapbox. I recommend that you join thousands of companies and hundreds of thousands of developers who've already integrated Mapbox into their Android project. You can visit mapbox.com/android to get started. Again, that's mapbox.com/android. We're back. Kaushik, this is the first time you and I have been on a call in a while now. Most people don't know it. We kind of sometimes will batch these up a little bit, but
we started recording today and we're like, how do we do this again? I think so new.
Exactly. So we have some interesting news that happened while throughout the holidays. Wouldn't you agree?
It was a happy new year, but there's been some bittersweet news that I think we kind of need to address, don't we?
Yeah, and that news, without further ado, is that our sponsor, BuddyBuild, was acquired by Apple, and it seems as if it's going to be, the Android support's going to be shuttered. Is that in March that it's going to be shuttered?
They did say March, March 1st, I believe.
Yeah, so that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I will say this, you know, when the news came out, it definitely was sort of a downer as an Android developer. Mm-hmm. We tell this to most folks, right? Like when we recommend a service here, we do it because we either use it or like we very strongly believe in the service.
Yeah.
And that was absolutely the case with BuddyBuild too, right? I thought BuddyBuild was definitely the best CI service that I've used in a very long time. And I mean, I was a very vehement sort of promoter of BuddyBuild. If anyone came and asked me, I was like, if you have the money, just give it to BuddyBuild because it solves so many of those problems. So yeah, I mean, I was definitely taken aback. But I do think we should acknowledge too, right? Like what happened is a good thing, like for them.
Yeah. The point you bring up is that it was such a great service. And this happens with a lot of companies out there that you might use a service that you love. And, you know, they are a startup. They are moving at a rapid pace. They're trying to build their market share. A lot of folks end up liking them. What's going to end up happening is going to attract other companies to look at them for acquisitions. And that's kind of what happened here with BuddyBuild.
Right. And I mean, but it brings up an interesting question, right? Does that mean I should always rely on, you know, well-established services and not look at, like, you know, some of these smaller options because, you know, if they get good enough, they're going to get acquired? Do you think that's the right mindset?
I think that's a fear-based mindset that if you operate in that manner, you're never going to be able to move forward at any effective pace because you're going to be putting yourself in a level of analysis paralysis that's just going to 100%. Be too hard to climb out of. In my opinion, what you need to do is find something that works for you in that given time and execute with it. If things change down the future, you know, down the road a little bit, then that's when you need to iterate. And that seems like one of the things that might have happened here.
100%. And along that mindset, right? I mean, this is the same thing, like, because many people have, like, reached out on Twitter, and, like, you know, many of the people I've, like, so strongly, like, recommended BuddyBuild have come back and asked me, like, oh, I mean, you know, in hindsight, if you knew this, would you have recommended the service? This is a tricky question to answer, because it also depends when you ask me, right? If I knew, I mean, I'm not going to recommend BuddyBuild. Like Android developers, at least jump on BuddyBuild now, because, like, you know, they're going to, like, sunset the service, and I don't think you can even register now for Android builds. So obviously timing is a big thing, but also we've used them for a couple of months now, and it was amazing. So for those 8 or 9 months, it has saved all my time. It has made my life really easy. So for 8 or 9 months, that's a long time, especially in startup land, right? So, I mean, you know, I felt I got the best out of that service. I think you hit it out of the park there with that answer. You cannot approach this with a fear mindset, right? Now, again, this answer doesn't hold. I mean, if you work on a gigantic company, like, obviously the cost of having to move services is, you know, is considerable. So that keep that in mind as well. But if you're a team of less than 20 or, like, even 15 people, it's a no-brainer. It was such a good service, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, to kind of just harp on this a little more, if you approach everything with this fear mindset, then a lot of those services that you would typically want to use, you're not going to use, because a lot of these companies, and I forget what it was, I don't know if it was Dropbox or somebody like that, acquired one of the popular mail clients and then just, like, let it shutter.
I remember. I think it was Google acquired Sparrow. Right?
Was that what it was? Okay. Sparrow or Air or Mail or whatever, one of those companies. Yeah.
Right.
And I remember a lot of people were really angry about it. And it's just, unfortunately, that's kind of the nature of the beast of the technology industry. You use it, you like it. Sometimes it gets acquired, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, even if we go back way far, you know, I'm just going really far back here, but if you look at Google Analytics, Google Analytics actually wasn't born at Google. Google Analytics was born from a company called Urchin Analytics, which is why if you actually look at your Google Analytics code, which is the tracking code, you'll see UA hyphen. That's Urchin Analytics. It's from a company that they bought that morphed into what is now known as Google Analytics. Now, of course, they didn't shut it down for other people, but things do change. And I think that's the nature of the beast here in software. If we can't handle change as developers, then we're in the wrong industry.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes perfect sense.
So let me ask you, this is a burning question I've had. What are you going to do now? I know you have things at BuddyBuild. I actually have things at other CI services that haven't been acquired yet. We can talk about them in a little bit. But I know that you do use BuddyBuild. What's next for you?
Right now at Instacart, at least, like, we are in the process of, like, evaluation. So we are looking at some other services. We are trying to see some of the things that we loved with BuddyBuild, like, are there any services out there that actually satisfy the same things that we want? And, like, you know, we're in the process of evaluation. And, yeah, definitely we'll be moving to, like, one of these other services. That's at least what I had in mind.
So that kind of beckons a question of something that you said a few minutes ago of, does that mean that you're only going to evaluate more established companies now because you guys are afraid of this happening again?
Personally, no. Honestly, for someone who works in a startup, that would kind of be like hypocrisy, right? to think that, like, you know, anything that we use is not going to eventually get acquired. If it was super critical and we found ourselves moving constantly, I mean, it is something that we'll have to keep in mind. But I don't necessarily feel that too strongly. And, like, we'll get into this shortly, right? Part of what we expect from a CI service is that we're able to, like, quickly integrate and do things. Sure, it's going to mean, like, 4 or 5 days of my time trying to find an alternative. But I know, absolutely not. All I look for is, like, the best service that gives me something similar, if not better, than BuddyBuild. And I'll just, like, move on to that. That's my plan, at least.
Makes sense. So with that said, should we maybe talk about some of the other options that exist out there for CI?
But before that, I wanted to ask you, Don.
Yeah.
You've been using a CI for a long time, right? What are some things you look for in a CI? I can tell you what I loved about BuddyBuild and why I felt it was, like, you know, the answer to all my problems. But you've been using a lot of CI services. And what are the things that you look for in services like this?
That's a great question. I think it's really dependent. Well, I know it's really dependent upon the use case that I have. So let's take maybe a couple of scenarios here. Scenario number one is I'm brought into a company. They already have an Android app. Maybe it's a small one, or they need an Android app built. At that point in time, most likely, and this is probably 95% of the time, these small companies do not have any continuous integration setup. It's on one developer's machine. or they're, you know, hopefully they're in source control. I mean, this is real world. This is how it happens out there. So at that point in time, I'm looking for something that's just going to enable me to get a build up and running as fast as possible. And what I'm looking for at that point is just very basic functionality of, okay, can I provide a build script? It can execute these few things, such as just compile it, kick me out an APK. And if there's a failure, I can then have an email sent out or have something into like a Slack hook to say, hey, this failed. That right there is my number one goal, because I want to get that quick feedback. And this is really to solve, and this is kind of going back on the whole CI discussion. If for some reason, my teammate or I push up some code changes and it breaks, you know, the master branch or develop branch, whatever I'm on, I want to be notified. I don't want to have to, you know, tomorrow I don't want to pull the latest code and then it doesn't build. And then I have to spend the next 2 hours figuring out why it doesn't build. Like, I want to be notified immediately. So that's the number one thing that I want.
I want to step back a little because you brought up some like great points, right? Like about what you want in your flow. Buddy Build was a CI and a CD service, right? So there's the continuous integration portion and there's the continuous delivery portion.
Do you want to explain what those two are?
Yeah, for sure. This might actually be more easily explainable as we walk through a workflow.
Mm-hmm.
So let's think about where we start, right? So I write the code in my IDE. I commit it to GitHub or Bitbucket or whatever version control system I use to host my code. And then the next process is the integration process, right? So this is basically the part where we merge everyone's new changes in, right? So if I have 3 or more people committing code to a repository, then at some point, you got to make sure that nobody's stepping on somebody else's toes, right? So we collect all of that code and merge it together to make sure all is well. There's no merge conflicts, etc. After that, we run a whole bunch of other checks. So most importantly for Android developers, this could be lint checks. It could be other static analysis checks like PMD, find bugs, and a bunch of the others that I cannot remember right now. So up until this point, I've committed code, I've built it up, and I've integrated it all, right? So this is the continuous integration portion. Now we step into the CD portion, which could either mean continuous delivery or it could mean continuous deployment. Now it's very easy to confuse the two because they're very similar, but there's a subtle difference. After having finished the integration, the first thing I do is I typically run my unit tests, right? After these, I run my UI tests, and this typically for us Android developers is like our espresso tests, right? So I finish the testing stage. And now that I've finished testing, I have my Android APK ready to be staged, right? So I stage the APK and it's now ready to go into production. And this is where like the subtle difference comes in. If you manually release to production, then typically this is called a continuous delivery, right? But if you automatically also deploy it to production, which is like going the next step, then that's called continuous deployment. Now, typically for the web folks, they don't have like any of these complications like versioning system or like, you know, compiling the app or going to the Play Store. For them, essentially, as soon as you commit code, like it's easier to get it into production, right? There's no stay. It's all like in the snap of a fingers, everything just goes to production. So the continuous deployment is really valuable for web developers. But as an Android developer, typically, the way we do it, and I know like the Play Store now has like APIs where you can directly, you can automate the process of also like pushing that APK to the Play Store or the App Store. But I mean, at least like the practice that I've followed so far is using this third-party service to pull changes from my code, running my checks, running my tests, and just getting it to a point where my APK is ready. I don't know about you, Ron, but for me personally, this is like the most important part.
By far.
This is what like Buddy Build like solved for me.
Oh, yeah.
Do you also like feel the same there?
Yeah, I do feel the same way. And the continuous deployment thing, I think it's amazing. And in the web world, it's like, it's the gold standard. That's fantastic. But in the app world, right, like you said, there's a bunch of other gates and you know, security mechanisms we have to go through, and it makes it complicated. Right. Furthermore, on top of that, I think it's also important to note that as users, I don't want to be bombarded with an update every day or, you know, or however many days you're going to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Great point. I forgot about that. Yeah.
If you're updating your app once a week, like I'm all right with that. Like if I have automatic updates turned on, that's cool with me. But at the same time, I don't want to have to be constantly re-downloading your humongous app for whatever reason all the time because you guys are just pushing a bug fix or whatever like that. So I feel that that process needs to be managed differently. And there are different tools to support that. So I'm not going to say that there aren't, but that's just a different mechanism.
Right. And I think for me, like a large part of why we wanted that as mobile developers is because our tests, like our integration tests, and they take so long to run, right?
Yep.
In the grand scheme of things. So ideally, what I would like is like, you know, I'm working on this thing. I'm thinking, yeah, I think that should work. And, you know, my tests for this feature work. I'm just going to commit this. I'll go grab a cup of coffee and then like, you know, I want to make sure that I haven't broken somebody else. Like I haven't broken the world, right? Like mm-hmm. And if you have it to a point where you have your tests covering like a good, if you have good coverage of tests in like the other portions of your app, like this will immediately tell you if you've broken something, right? I can move on to like doing something else without having to necessarily wait for this. Like, you know, everything's automated at that point. So for me personally, that has been like the virtuous cycle where like, you know, I have this, it runs on like, you know, a bunch of devices. I don't have to worry about it. And if it's broken on one device and not another device, like, you know, the CI tells me versus me like an animal having to connect my computer to like 3 phones and then running like, you know, my espresso test and all of those and making sure I haven't broken something. So
yeah, exactly. And that's also builds into one of our previous episodes where we talked about CI and CD, about just the confidence that you can have building applications when you have these tests written and these things are enabled. And I think that I know that continuous integration servers help solve that problem. And we can talk about some of the solutions to make it a little bit even less painful, but I completely agree with you.
So we've spent time at this point, like talking about what we would like, right? You know, you mentioned every time something fails or something, like, you know, if your tests fail, then it sends out like Slack notifications, email notifications, maybe even like adds that badge on GitHub saying something went wrong or like you can't merge this back to a master. Like, you know, there are a couple of nice things along that line, right? What are some solutions that come to mind now? What are some solutions that you have used in the past? And I can tell you like some of the ones that I'm looking for right now.
So just before I hop into that real quick, I wanted to wrap up the previous thought of we had said like what type of features do I look for in CI/CD? And the first one was the very basic stuff. That's just, we're getting something built. If we have tests, we have tests, whatever. At a further level, what I'm looking for is if this is a company that's established, they need a whole bunch of integrations. They need, when this happens, you got to kick off all these other parallel builds and you need a bunch of configuration options. At that point, I'm going to go for something that's a little more hardened and has a lot more configuration options. And usually that's going to take a lot more time to set up. And we'll talk about those as well. So those are kind of the two different areas that I usually look into.
Good point. And we'll go into this, but you know, Firebase integration is something that like folks, like many services are doing now where you mm-hmm. can just call out to Google's Firebase test lab and you don't have to worry about like setting that stuff up, right?
So, exactly.
Good point.
But in regards to actual services, there's a ton of them out there. And so I think there's two different buckets here that we need to evaluate. And one is going to be self-managed, meaning that you're going to install it on your servers. You're going to manage it. And then the other is going to be a hosted type of solution. Let me throw this question back over the wall to you. In regards to what you're looking for, what do you usually prefer in this type of scenario? Is it going to be something that you manage or is it something that you want already managed for you and you just have it work?
That is a great question. And that is like a very heated question that I've had with many of my colleagues. my personal opinion is I absolutely want to spend zero time on maintaining this server. You know, you mentioned like, you know, something that we can host it. And I saw you drifting gradually away to that, you know, that service that starts with J that we all love to hate. Here's my thing, right? We did have like a hosted solution before. So we didn't like explore third-party services before. What would happen is we'll have this thing. We'll have it on like, you know, a Mac or like some, or a machine running, you know, in our offices connected to like two devices. Yeah. Or a closet. Exactly.
On someone's desk.
Connected to two devices, right? And once we set it up for the first 2-3 weeks, everything's glorious, right? Like, oh, amazing. We have complete control. Everything's working.
Yep.
But you know what happens? If it's a Mac, you'll get a security update and you'll have like, you know, like maybe a keychain update. Somebody will forget to like, you know, lock the machine or someone will kick the plug and like, you know, that Mac, you know, goes offline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Until then, everyone's CI is like held back, right? So definitely that's a pain. I want to have to not spend any time on this. Like if I can, after having my CI set up, I basically want to spend zero time on this, and I want to spend time only on, like, you know, writing code for the app. So yeah. I am a huge, huge believer in using third-party services for this, especially if your company can afford it. I do not want to spend any time on this. I would rather, you know, throw money at this problem, as, like, you know, the common term goes, because that just saves so much of my time, right? Mm-hmm. And this is also what I liked about BuddyBuild. Like, the integration was easy. I didn't have to, almost everything was just like a toggle switch, right?
Yep.
I didn't have to do that much, like, crazy stuff to get it set up. So that's my philosophy. If I can avoid it, I will, for the life of me, fight having to use something like Jenkins, where I have to, like, worry about the machine myself. What's your process been?
I'm in the same boat as you, so I'll keep it short and sweet. I don't want to have to manage anything additionally. I have too many responsibilities, as you do and as all of the listeners here on the show do. We're all trying to get stuff done in Android, build the apps. I don't have a lot of time to sit around and manage a Jenkins server, security updates, all the other stuff. I want to offload as much of that as possible to a third party.
Short and sweet. I love it. But we should also, like, you know, not dismiss, because Jenkins is, for the longest time, been like the proven platform, right? Like, almost 80% of anyone you talk to at a, like, big company does use Jenkins. And when would I use a self-hosted solution? Because, you know, if all these big companies are using it, like, they're not crazy. So
that's a great question. Jenkins, I don't want people to think I hate on Jenkins. I think Jenkins is a fantastic platform. I just don't want to manage it as a personal, as an individual.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm working at a company and they can have the support staff to help me manage that continuous integration environment, the servers and all that, I think Jenkins might be one of your best choices, because it offers you the flexibility like no other platform can. And if someone knows what they're doing with basic, you know, Vagrant and all that other stuff, I mean, you can fire at multiple servers quickly and scale horizontally very easily. So at what point should you use Jenkins? I think that's again one of those things of, like, how much configuration do you need? Jenkins is going to kind of be that Swiss Army knife that allows you to do anything and everything that you want to do. You want to write some custom code to do something? No problem. You can do it. Do you want to create a particular plugin to do whatever you want? Sure, you can do it. It's most likely already out there. It's that kind of situation of, like, all right, at that point, you can use Jenkins. And I think it's also important to note, just because you want to use Jenkins, you don't have to use the self-hosted version as well. There's also a CloudBees managed solution, which you can do in the cloud. But then again, you still do have to know how to set up and install Jenkins. But to kind of bring this full circle, if you want to use Jenkins or you're considering it, I would only use it if you really need all of these advanced features, all of this tons of configuration, and you can't find that in any other platform.
Right. And I mean, to be fair, like, Jenkins has been changing up their game a lot. Like, you know, like you rightly pointed out, like, the hosted solutions, I've heard good stories about it. I've not used it myself, but, you know, that's, I think, keep it in mind. Always be open to evaluating any option. Right?
And I still do use Jenkins now. Some of my clients still use Jenkins. And given the way that they have it set up, it's one of my favorite ways to use continuous integration, but the amount of work that it's taken to get to where they are is significant. It's not a quick little, hey, let's hack on this for a couple of days. No, it's a significant amount of work to get their CI system set up the way it is and to do the things that it does. So unless you have that ability and the pockets to support that, it might not work.
Exactly. Yeah, you need people to support it too, right? Like, if you have that, then it's like, then Jenkins is probably, like, you know, one of the best solutions out there. So
yeah, totally.
I've been looking at some of these other services, and I'm just going to name some of these straight up. I'll just, like, drop these out. Bitrise is a new one. And
I've heard a lot about this one.
Yeah, and this one is probably the closest I can find to BuddyBuild. There's this one, and there's another one called Never Code. Some of these are, like, have funny names, and we'll drop links in the show notes to all of these services. But Bitrise is the one that's looking, at least right now, most promising for me. It's the one that I found, like, most similar to BuddyBuild. So Bitrise, Never Code. And there are, like, some of, like, the newer, very, like, established solutions, right? And, like, you know, you talked to a couple of the folks at Microsoft, and App Center is very squarely in this game now, right?
Yeah, App Center is out there as well. I mean, they're going after the whole crowd of, hey, we want to, we want to allow you to upload, connect your code from GitHub or wherever it's at. You want to, you know, write some test code, it runs through, you know, instrumentation tests. You can then run it against their cloud servers. You choose the devices you want. Their goal is to make it, and if you've ever, and I'm kind of intermingling topics here. If you've ever worked in .NET or you ever worked in a Microsoft technologies, you've probably kind of been familiar with this. Like, oh, you just click this button and you enable this option and things just magically work. That's the kind of the approach they're trying to go for with App Center, in my opinion. They want to enable you to connect it and just, you know, say, hey, I want to test this stuff. They'll read your build.gradle file and off and running. Now, I haven't used it personally, but that's kind of the whole selling proposition that they do have.
I'll drop a link to episode 104, and this is where we have Don talk to some of the folks. The PM on the App Center team was kind enough to, you know, join us on the show. You can listen to all the details. Samina, I believe, was her name, yeah. If I remember right. So, yeah, so basically you can listen to that show and, you know, we dive, Don dives pretty deep into App Center and it being an option.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note too, we're talking about a bunch of different companies here and these companies do make money. None of these, of what we're talking about in this episode is any sponsored content. This is all us just kind of talking as developers, here's a couple of different services because this other one kind of fell through for us.
Well, 100%. We probably should have opened the episode with that statement in mind. But yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, this is all just two developers trying to find a solution right now.
You brought up Bitrise, and that one was interesting. This was brought to my attention just quite recently, within the last month, and I heard it from Ravindra Kumar, and I heard it from Eric Hellman. Both of which are active in the Android community, and they both had great things to say about it. Have you used Bitrise at all, or have you played with it at all?
I have just started using it, so I don't necessarily have that strong an opinion yet because I've not used it enough. I'm literally, as we speak right now, we are trying them out, where I work. So
interesting.
It's been very good. It's very. It has the same buddy build, sort of the playful aspect to it, and the UI is so much better than most services.
Yes, they just, for folks know too. I'll try to cover some of these in each one. But Bitrise does have a free plan that you can kind of hop on it and try out too. So that's always a nice value add there.
Right, and with all these services, there are some small things that we just we have to get them working better. For example, with Bitrise, if I believe right, the Firebase Test Lab integration is very new. So it's, and by the time that, this episode is out, who knows, maybe it might actually go live. But, and I think with the Firebase Test Lab integration with Bitrise is in beta. So, just keep that in mind. Yeah. And this was one of my things, with Buddy Build, it had just the exact kind of things that I wanted, and everything was just a toggle switch away. And that's really what I'm missing. I've not been completely sold yet on any solution that has that, but I think most of these services are getting there.
Yeah, it's nice to have kind of those quick toggle switches where you can enable, hey, run this test on Firebase, or run these tests over here, or do X, Y, and Z, send this message to Slack or whatever, without having to hop into some weird YAML file or some XML file to configure it. Yeah, so Bitrise is interesting. The one that I use currently and I've been using for a while is actually still Circle CI.
Oh, yeah.
They do have a free plan you can use, and that's one of the reasons I've kind of just stayed on them, is it's just worked for the low build frequency for some of my clients. Because some of my clients, they'll build the app, it works. They may need to make an update every month or two to whatever reason, or a few updates, but it's nothing like a full-on an engineering team making multiple pushes, which they can support that. But at some level, I have heard a few folks run into some issues with the actual emulator support and so forth like that. So I haven't dug too deep into Circle CI and Firebase's stuff yet.
With Circle CI, didn't they also do a revamp recently? They had a 2.0 or something, right?
Yeah.
Where they apparently improved the Android integration and stuff. So something to keep in mind. And I mean, we use Circle CI for our web stuff, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, Circle CI is also a very good contender.
Yeah, you can. I mean, you can do. Actually, I'm looking now. You can integrate with Firebase Test Lab too. They have a support document on that, so that's interesting.
Oh wow! In Circle CI.
Yeah, it's still more configuration-based. It's not going to be a flip of a switch from what it looks like.
Got it. I remember what my problem with Circle CI now was. I think with Circle CI, what happens is, if you use GitHub, they put it all under the common org. So there's this thing called build concurrency, right?
Yeah.
Which is and you touched on this a little later with the VMs and stuff. If you want faster builds, what you can do is if I push code and Don pushes code, you can literally just spin up two machines and have this run parallelly, right? So you'll get your results faster. And so this is build concurrency. So here we have a concurrency of two, right? And, you know, the more concurrency you have, the faster your builds will probably be. But obviously, this means more machine CPU power, and you probably have to pay for it. That's mostly how a lot of these CI services make money, right? Like, the more concurrency you want, like, you know, they dial up the price on that.
And the reason why I think it's important to understand what that means is, like, mm-hmm. what if you can't dial up concurrency, Kaushik? What happens?
Oh, well, then what happens is essentially you have to wait on builds. So if, like, Don, you know, being like the super fast coder that he is, pushes out like four builds, and when I push my code, I'm far more slower than Don. So he pushes four changes, four of his builds are running. So CircleCI is like, oh my God, okay, I got four of these builds. It doesn't necessarily care about who pushed the builds, just that a build needs to be performed, right? And if your build concurrency is four, then all of these four servers are taken. So now I come in, I push my code change. CircleCI sees that, or, like, you know, whatever your third-party service is, it sees that and says, whoa, 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 I only have four machines that are working right now. So you are in the queue. You're going to be put on hold. After any one of these free up, then I'll pull your job from the queue.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it'll go into the next cycle. So what this means is, theoretically, if I had like an infinite build concurrency, that would be amazing. Then I never have to wait, right? The minute I push my code, my build is like picked up right away and, like, you know, it's run in the background.
Yeah. And the reason why that becomes a problem is because what it effectively does is just slows down your feedback loop. And that's kind of what CI is enabling us to do, is if I make a change now, I don't want to be notified of an error in 4 hours. Like, it would be right. great to be yeah. notified within 4 minutes, or, you know, or somewhere, you know, within a reasonable amount of time. But I don't want to be notified tomorrow. Now, that's different if you have a humongous test suite of, let's say, all of your integration tests take 4 hours to run through the entire suite. Then maybe you have it run at night. That's mm-hmm. something different. What I'm talking about is actual unit tests and does it compile and stuff like that. One of the other selling points of a self-managed solution such as Jenkins, if you have the ability and the support staff to horizontally scale out, get more servers inside of your Jenkins cluster, then you can do that. And then you worry about those prices or that scaling there, as with the hosted solution, you may just have having to just fork out a little more cash for more concurrency.
Right. That makes sense. So going back, two problems I found with CircleCI when I tried to use them was, and I don't know if this is something that they have like figured out, with CircleCI, they club everyone in your GitHub organization under the same umbrella of your build concurrency. So if I have 50 build servers under like my CircleCI plan, what that means is iOS developers, Android developers, and more importantly, web developers all are clubbed in the same organization and we share the same build concurrency. And that was almost a deal breaker for me because our web folks are crazy. Like, if I open up our CircleCI server now, I'm pretty sure there's at least like 5 builds running now as we speak. So that was not going to work for me because then my Android team is essentially always going to be waiting. So that was like one problem I found with them. And this is also another important aspect with a lot of like these solutions. I don't think all of them run their UI tests on physical devices. Like, most have started doing, and you mentioned CircleCI now has like Firebase Test Lab integration. And this has been a really smart way that both Google and like many of these third-party CI solutions have worked, where you can say, just shoot it off to Firebase. And BuddyBuild did the same thing. I want to ask your opinion on this. For me, I've been burnt in the past where certain things run okay on an emulator but not on an actual device, or like, you know, vice versa. Like, you know, these tests will never run on a VM an emulator, but they would go through successfully on an actual device, which is what in the end I care about, right? Do you have like an opinion about running on, you know, emulators versus running on like real devices?
I did for a long time. I really hated emulators for a long time, and I've come to embrace them in some sense. And what I mean by that is, goes back years, but years ago I was at a code camp and I was talking with Michael Bailey, who's been on the show a few times, about how his company run their tests. And he said something that really kind of just like hit me upside the head like a bat, and it just made a lot of sense. He said, you know, we find like the worst device or the worst emulator that we can find, and we make sure our tests pass on that, and then we make sure that our tests pass also on, you know, whatever is kind of the most common configuration, because we're never going to be able to test on all of them. Mm-hmm. And given those two, we're going to cover the majority of our use cases. And then, of course, if we get errors come in, we'll handle those on a case-by-case basis. But, so to bring that back, what that means is if they're running something, let's say you're using Firebase Test Lab, we may choose the lowest API level that we can go to at the lowest resolution that we can go to on the smallest phone device that we can go to, because this is really going to test the limits of your tests. Like, all right, something that is normally on the screen is not on the screen anymore and you need to scroll to it. How does that affect your UI? How does it affect your test? Right. And then on the flip side of it, we'll have one that's, a current API level and we're running Android O or whatever, and we'll run all the tests there. So, in short, I feel that emulators are great because you can emulate certain environments. I think you just have to use them effectively. But for you, do you still feel that devices are still the way to go?
I don't have too strong an opinion, but given a choice, I always usually prefer having run my tests on real devices. So for me, it's almost a deal breaker with CI solutions, right? I'm fine if they can run it also on emulators, but there has to be an option to run it on an actual device. At least like with Instacart, I work on the shopper side of things, and sometimes I need to be able to run it on different kinds of devices, right? Like there's a wide variety of devices, and I'm sure that's the case for like almost all apps these days, right? Sometimes I'll open up Crashlytics, my crash reporting tool, and I'll find this weird crash that happens only on Samsung devices. Thank you, Samsung.
No.
Or some device that I've never heard of, and it happens consistently to a subsection of our user base. If I can't get a hold of that device quickly enough, it is super helpful to be able to just pull up BuddyBuild or Firebase Test Lab and say, flip the switch and start running my tests now also on this device, right? Without me having to worry about it. That is almost like a godsend. But I will say tests are way more flakier on emulators for some reason. So
yeah, and I want to make sure I'm clarifying too. I wasn't saying Firebase is emulated. Firebase does run on real devices, which is actually some of the real power of it. And if I have my choice when I'm setting up the CI environment, I want to connect to something like Firebase or something else, some other device farm that's out there that I can run my tests on. I trust Firebase because it's a Google product, and that's something that they want to use for Android developers. So like you said, if you want to make sure it's actually running on this device, then run it. Now, locally, when I actually do my day-to-day development, I am 100% emulator. I rarely ever run inside the device. I'll run all my integration tests that I'm doing for my particular activity on an actual emulator, and then I'll push it up and I'll have Firebase run those tests on whatever real devices we have.
Oh, we're on the same page. And that's exactly what I do. All right. So we've talked about some of these services. There's another one that I'm very curious about. One of our good friends, Hadi, works at JetBrains. Mm-hmm. And I believe they have a solution too, right? Can you tell us a little about this one?
Yeah, so Team City is a solution that's been around for quite a while. I actually used Team City years ago in a lot of web environments prior to a lot of these other technologies such as Jenkins, previously when it was known as Hudson.
Wow.
I used to use another tool called Cruise Control. And these things were always just a humongous time sink to set up, and Team City just always seemed to work. So JetBrains does offer a solution called Team City. So if you're interested, I would go check it out. It is their continuous integration environment. But I don't use it currently, but I know that there are a lot of folks out there that do use it.
And I mean, if folks use it and have successfully used it for Android development, hit us up. We'd love to know. Mm-hmm. If you know some third-party solutions that we haven't already mentioned, like send it over. We can share it with the other folks. I think that'll be a huge learning opportunity.
Yeah, and I think Team City does have the downloadable version. I think they might also have one that's hosted, though. I'd have to double check, though. We'll put a link in the show notes.
I am almost certain I remember seeing Team City having a hosted solution. So
awesome.
We'll add that in the show notes as well. The other one I wanted to quickly bring up is Nevercode.
Mm-hmm.
This is also a newer service, and the reason I bring it up is because they have tried to utilize this opportunity of BuddyBuild sunsetting Android developers, and they actually have a blog post, I believe, saying, welcome to Android developers. Like, if you're migrating from BuddyBuild, here's how you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Welcome Home Android Developer. That's the the name of the blog post. So good job, Nevercode. When I read that, I'm like, oh, okay, so these guys have used BuddyBuild, and they probably know the things that I want. So that was a very catchy blog post. So we'll drop that link in the show notes as well. So that's also another solution.
Yeah, I think, we could probably continue on down this road for the next hour of other services out there. I mean, there's like ones like CodeShip, of course, we already talked about Visual Studio. Then you have all the other ones that are starting to be built into various different CI, like get infrastructures. Like I think Bitbucket mm-hmm. offers like a pipeline for it now. So mm-hmm. there's a bunch of different ones out there. At the end of the day, I think it's important that you just evaluate the one that's going to fit your needs the best and run with that, and then get back to shipping your apps.
Yep. That makes sense. All righty. Thank you all so much for listening. Don, if folks want to see all those VMs and all those crazy emulators and devices that you have your tests running on, I'm sure Casser has like something hooked up to, right?
Yep, we do. Indeed, we do. If folks want to get a hold of me, they can reach me at Twitter at Don Felker, or also on Instagram at Don Felker. And Kaushik, you are making a transition from Buddy Build. So if folks want to follow up with you to see kind of what path you've gone down, how can they get a hold of you?
I am Kaushik Gopal on Twitter. I am also Kaushik Gopal on Instagram. Like, I'm not as interesting as Don, so you only probably find old car photos on my Instagram.
Right, before we get out of here, I'd like to take a few moments to thank our sponsor for this episode, and that's Mapbox. If you're looking for a map and you want to put it inside of your application, you definitely need to check out Mapbox. They provide turn-by-turn driving for walking, driving, biking. They offer complete map design control. It's a tremendously huge thing. They offer you all kinds of different functionality, such as geocoding, reverse geocoding, location, you name it. Mapbox has got you covered. If you're interested, go to mapbox.com/android to get started. Again, that's mapbox.com/android.
Thank you all for listening. We will catch you in the next episode.